Well, we're just over a month away from the election of 2016. It's a season of campaign advertising, speeches, debates, and of course, polling. Every election cycle, Illinois voters are asked their opinions on a range of issues by the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at SIU Carbondale. This year, they weighed in on elections for president and U.S. Senate, the popularity state government leaders have, and whether Illinois ought to amend its constitution to lock in road building money. The Simon Institute's John Jackson spoke with our reporter, Brian Mackey.
John Jackson, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Let's begin at the top of the ticket with Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump. You're reporting a wide gap between the presidential nominees.
Yes, Clinton is getting 53%, Trump 28% currently in our poll.
That's not quite, but almost a doubling. Of course, Illinois is now voted Democratic, what, every year going back to 1992?
1988, we voted for, yeah, you're right, because we voted for Bush in 88 against Dukakis, started with Clinton in 92.
And we've pretty much become what's regarded as a deep blue state since then. Does the margin this year fit with that trend?
Well, yeah, at the presidential level, you would have to call us a deep blue state. I have some problems with that at the state level, which is a different story. But certainly this is a remarkably wide margin and shows that Donald Trump would have his work cut out for him to win Illinois.
You know, I was struck looking as you sort of drill down into the results that twice as many downstaters as Chicagoans, I think it was 15%, say they don't know how they'll vote for president. The third party candidates don't seem to be getting a lot of traction here, but there's still that big other slash don't know category, particularly downstate. Do you have any idea what might be behind that sort of non-committal electorate?
Well, I would add to that, however, that Trump is up by one downstate. It's a statistical tie, but Trump plus one. Downstate may still be having more problems making up their minds. Clearly, Chicago and the collar counties are much more likely to be voting for Clinton, and that's the margin right there.
And, of course, a lot more population in Chicago and the collar counties.
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Moving to still on national politics, but at the statewide level, your poll of the U.S. Senate race here has Democratic Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth leading incumbent Republican Senator Mark Kirk 48-34. That's a 14-point margin. That's a lot higher. I was looking. Emerson and Loras College polls had 2- and 5-point spreads. Do you have a sense that this race is breaking one way or the other, or is that just the normal sort of variability you'd expect at this point?
Well, polls always vary somewhat and bounce around by the timing. We were in the field last week immediately after the first debate where Clinton got a lot of credit for having won, of course. Whether that explains the difference or not, the other thing is you have to get into how they factor in the difference between registered voters and likely voters, and people do that differently. That might well be part of the difference right there. I don't think anybody has shown Kirk leading that I'm aware of.
Yeah, no, and this is sort of what I've heard it referred to as the secret sauce of pollsters, right? How you weight, how you make these determinations.
Well, and it's there is no magic key. It's all a matter of a series of judgment calls. So that will get you some different results, as will the timing of the poll.
Yeah, I was struck, I don't know if you saw that article in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago where they took the same set of polling data and gave it to five different analysts, and they all came up with five different results.
Exactly. I saw that, and that is exactly right, because there is a great deal of science, but nevertheless some art to it.
Yeah. I wonder, pollsters have had a number of challenges in recent years with the shift to mobile phones. I don't know if declining participation rates has been an issue. And then, of course, in the primary this year, we saw a lot of times that candidates were performing in the actual election quite differently than the polls had predicted. Is there anything new that could complicate your efforts to read public opinion this cycle?
Yeah, there are always challenges and always those problems that you just alluded to. I will note that we went for the first time this time from 40% cell phones to 60% cell phones. So that alone could account for some differences. The industry standard is becoming 60% because so many people don't have landlines. And if you don't get a very heavy emphasis on cell phones, you systematically underrepresent particularly the young, but other more mobile people.
Yeah, I see that lack of landlines. I mean, I know that used to be something that was just younger people, but I see more and more people of advancing years doing that.
Indeed.
As well. I wonder, does your poll, though, I mean, obviously you account for what you expect the Illinois electorate to look like in terms of number of Democrats and Republicans and try and achieve a balance that's similar to what the state.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Looking, just wrapping up on these national numbers, did anything else jump out at you as surprising or particularly interesting about the race for U.S. Senate or president this year?
Well, again, I think you get the distributions by geography that we've come to expect. But again, the suburban area, the collar counties, are critical. And I think it's a bit surprising that Kirk is not doing as well in the collar counties as you would expect a Republican candidate. And while I haven't thoroughly analyzed this, I have looked at the crosstabs with military family or current military, and she actually did somewhat better than he did on those who claim to be military families.
Oh, Duckworth did.
Yes.
And of course, she's a veteran of the Iraq War, was wounded there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Moving to Illinois politicians, you looked at the popularity, or I guess the more accurate way to phrase it would be unpopularity, of both Governor Bruce Rauner, the Republican, and House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Democrat, and found that neither of them are particularly popular right now.
Well, they're all underwater, and they're all way more negative than positive. The governor is somewhat less underwater than the speaker, which not, it's damning with faint praise, perhaps.
Now, there have been attempts, and I guess we should point out that this year we are seeing quite a bit of Republican state legislative candidates who are sending mailers out against their Democratic opponents, attempting to tie them to House Speaker Madigan. And similarly, you have Democrats trying to make the case, I think, tie some of the Republicans to Governor Bruce Rauner. We've seen attempts in the past to make House Speaker Madigan, in particular, a campaign issue. It's never seemed to amount to much. Obviously, he is still the House Speaker. Democrats still have veto-proof majorities in the General Assembly. Does it look like that may be playing out differently this year, though?
Well, if it is, the difference will be the amounts of money being spent and how early the television came up. In southern Illinois, we had just a blast of television, mostly originally on the Republican side, but quickly matched by the Democratic side, either damning the governor or damning the speaker and tying whoever the legislative candidate was to their party's leader. And it's just been incessant, and I'm sure the rest of the state's the same way. I don't think it's ever been quite this intense, nor quite as clearly identifiable with the two leaders. And the other difference, I think, is that the governor has created a party platform, which most of his candidates are running on, things like term limits, for example, that they basically all have adopted. And so it's more systematic and louder and more pervasive this time.
Do you see any signs that there could be a shift in the balance of power in the General Assembly, or at least a few seats flipping from one party to the other?
Well, we have a statewide sample, so we can't really talk about individual legislative districts. I would say overall, strictly impressionistically, that I would expect some marginal change, but not anywhere close to a landslide, not a so-called wave election by any stretch of the imagination. We'll probably get individual districts shifting back and forth, but I can't believe there's going to be a huge shift in the General Assembly.
I was struck, looking specifically at Governor Rauner's approval rating, that it's remained largely steady. His approval, that is, has remained steady in your three polls since he took office at about 40%, give or take. But his disapproval has shot way up. And the number
it's up by almost 20% on the disapproval side.
Yeah, well, at the same time, the number of people who say they have no opinion of him is way down. Those two lines just kind of diverge in opposite directions.
Yeah, exactly. The first time we took that sounding, which was about 2 or 3 months into his first term, there was a big no opinion, but that has decreased.
Is this typical for somebody as a relatively unknown candidate who actually spends some time doing the job then?
Yes, I think so. He is much more recognizable now, and he's all over our television on that term limits ad, if not the others.
So on the one hand, you have people who are certainly becoming more aware. They now have an opinion of Governor Rauner one way or the other. And yet non-attitudes, non-opinion is something that pollsters are always watching out for and trying to avoid.
Yeah, exactly.
I noticed there were a couple of questions where you had, we haven't mentioned, Senate President John Cullerton is somebody you asked about. A lot of people who seem to not really have much of an opinion on the Democratic Senate president here in Illinois. And also the special election for the Illinois comptroller. Is that the non-opinion there? Is that these are just kind of having a hard time cutting through the noise of everything else that's happening now?
Well, I think so. That's a part of it. And yet at the same time, the comptroller race showed an advantage for the Democratic candidate. But yes, there's plenty of time yet to go and plenty of race yet to unfold.
Did you happen to ask any poll questions about the constitutional amendment on transportation infrastructure funding?
I did. I can tell you the answer to that.
Okay. How did that go?
Well, it's hugely popular at about 80% level, and it's, as you would expect, which again makes me think we have a pretty good sample, it's most popular downstate, second most popular in suburban, and slightly less popular in Chicago, but not by a lot. And even in Chicago, it's well above 70% going to vote for it.
You came out with a paper earlier this year, which was called Roots of Gridlock. It looked at public opinion polling over the last 8 years here in Illinois that the Simon Institute has done, and assess some of the blame on the voters for maybe giving contradictory instructions to their elected leaders here in Illinois based on their polling responses. Do you have any sense that that trend is continuing or breaking one way or the other with this election?
No, I think the trend is continuing. I think people expect the impossible from legislative leaders and governors. That is, they want all the services that they want and all the services that they take advantage of, and they want someone else to pay for them. They want low taxes and high service levels, and that we have demonstrated in Illinois pretty conclusively is not possible. And thus, the leaders tend to pander to those two quite opposite impulses from the public. They don't spend their time talking about what happens if we cut back the income tax, for example, or explaining where they're going to get the $5 to $6 billion tax loss and what it will do to their services. And then people are surprised and later more cynical and alienated when they find that a tax cut that nobody noticed actually wasn't free.
John Jackson is with the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute based at SIU Carbondale, and he spoke with our Statehouse reporter, Brian Mackey.